Welcome to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss an article that appeared at beef.unl.edu titled Best Practices for Needle Selection, Use, and Care in Cattle Health. To discuss the topic, I'm joined today by the author, Dr. Lindsay Wachter-Mead, who's a Nebraska Extension beef educator and veterinarian based in Webster County. Thanks for joining me today.
I'm happy to be back again, Aaron.
This is the time of year when there's a lot of folks doing their spring cattle work, thinking about branding, pre-breeding shots, things like that. I thought you did a really nice job in the article just laying out some of the things we need to think through as we think about needle selection, whether we're giving a vaccine or administering an antibiotic or applying a ester synchronization drug, thinking about what we give and the route we give that in terms of needle selection is important. And you do a nice job laying that out. Share with us the content you highlighted in the article and then just some things to think through as folks make decisions around needle selection.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, it's a pretty simple thing that maybe we don't stop and think about what type of needle we use. And it maybe just because we're so used to picking the same one every time. But I like to just kind of lay out why they're labeled the way they are, just so that you know what you're using. And then in the article, I reference the Beef Quality Assurance Guide. There's a chart in there that's really good and handy. And it's laid out by size, like the size of the cattle and then and what you're using, if it's thick or if it's a thin product. So the first thing that's on it, when you look at a needle, the first number is gauge. And so gauge, as gauge goes up, the bore of that needle gets smaller. So like the inside. So a 20 gauge needle is going to be a lot smaller than a 14 gauge needle. And so that will depend on, you know, if you wanted a 14 gauge needle stuck in your arm, you know, that's going to hurt and cause a lot more damage than say a 22 gauge needle. So think about that based on calf size. So around branding, especially, I usually go for about an 18 gauge needle. Sometimes even in baby calves, you could go as low as 20, but those adjust then as they get bigger. So then the second number on a needle would be length. And length is variable based on where you want that product to be distributed. And again, how much, basically how much muscle or how much tissue is there when you are injecting the product. So again, a newborn baby, if you're giving something to that calf, is not going to have hardly any tissue there. So you want to have a really short needle. Needles do go down all the way to a half inch, and then they go up. You know, you can get really long up into veterinary world. We get into spinal needles where they're, you know, 4 inches long. But normal, again, if I'm talking about this time of year and when I want to reach for a needle, if I'm going to be branding, then I'm probably going to reach for 5/8 inch needle. So that's going to just try and deposit that whatever product that we're using. Hopefully it'll go subcutaneously, so under the skin, because we're going to have a lot less damage than if we're going into the muscle. And that is again, a BQA recommendation that we want to give as many products as we can subcutaneously or sub-Q under the skin. Just try and prevent the amount of damage that might cause. And also we talk about residue and how those products are developed. And so again, that's just another important reminder of reading the label of what you're giving and to know where that needs to be given.
You also talk about in the article, and this is listed in the chart, as we think about cattle size and weight, as cattle weight and size go up, we're going to probably want to go for a bigger diameter gauge needle, which is actually like a 14 or 16 gauge versus, as you said, a smaller animal, where you might want to go with a smaller needle diameter. I think that's important to remember as well, just to have the right size for the right weight, the right use of product where it's going either intramuscular or subcutaneous. And then you also highlight if you need to give something intravenous, what kind of needle you want to use there as well.
Yeah, so those really big needles, so I'm always thinking about when I want to give something in the vein to an adult cow, if I have a down cow or something, I'm usually reaching for a 14 gauge needle, like 2 inches. So this is a big needle, but that has a couple reasons. Obviously, an adult cow, you know, if I'm talking a 1400 pound animal, I'm going to be able to deliver something a lot quicker. But I like the larger diameter. If I'm giving a fluid therapy or something quickly, it will go faster. So you had already said it. So as the weight of an animal goes up, that gauge goes down. So, you know, the bigger the animal, probably the smaller the number on the needle, but that just means the bore is bigger. So it kind of sounds confusing, But if if all of this seems kind of crazy, just again, I will reference that BQA chart. It's in the article that I wrote. It's also at bqa.org. It's a great reference just to kind of give you some guidance on what you're picking.
One of the other things you talk about is just making sure that we are looking at if we are using a product or using the needle with a product, trying to avoid needles bending. And then you also highlight, if a needle bends, we need to dispose of it immediately, changing needles frequently, obviously. But then also, if we have an event where a needle breaks off, we need to really address that immediately, mark that animal, mark where it occurred, and get that animal to a place where we can have surgery done and that needle removed. I think that's something important to highlight because we sure don't want that entering into the production chain.
Yeah, and I think it's I in personal experience and in practice too, I don't think it's something that we stressed high enough until, I started listening to Jesse Fulton give his BQA presentations and saw some of those visual pictures, if you've seen those that he has of where those needles are actually ending up in consumers' meat and what kind of image that gives to the beef industry. So if we have a needle that breaks, it's really important to have some sort of standard operating procedure. So like an SOP of what you should do next. Those needles can migrate quite quickly through the skin. So especially if it goes, into the subcutaneous level in the neck. So right underneath of the skin into that kind of fat area that's there before you get into the muscle. If you think about how much that animal moves its head around, those migrate significantly. And so what you want to do is immediately stop what you're doing. I would recommend taking like a livestock marking pin or chalk and just kind of put a little spot where you gave the injection so that there's some guidance. And then if you're not able to remove it, if you can't see it, obviously, and you're not able to get it, then you do want to call your veterinarian or someone who may be able to surgically remove it. We might be able to use an ultrasound or something to see if we can track it to get that removed, but also understand that we may not be able to recover that. And if that's the case, it doesn't mean that that animal needs to be sacrificed, immediately. It just means that you need to keep really good records of which animal that is. And then when the production's life is over for that animal, then they need to be euthanized and not put into the food chain. So we don't want to cull that animal, knowing that at some stage in its life there was a needle in there, because again, we just don't want to have that problem end up, that negative image. Keep that in mind, and have kind of a plan for hopefully that doesn't happen to you, but if it does, if you're prepared for it, that will be a little bit better. The other thing is, I know that I probably am guilty of it, and I'll be the first to admit, if you hit a new needle, you put one on and for some reason the cow moves, especially if you're doing some of those estrus synchronization protocols, and we're talking about long needles, if that bent a little bit, if you're trying to go like a larger gauge so that it's not so much in there, but the animal moves and it bends. That needle needs to just be disposed of. You can buy an entire box of 100. I just bought 100 needles yesterday and it was, I think, $12. So they are very inexpensive, but if you try to straighten that back out, it's going to affect the integrity and you're going to have a much more likely chance of that breaking. So just stop what you're doing, throw that away, put a new one on. That also goes with if you accidentally hit this, you accidentally bump the side of the chute when you pull it out from vaccinating, or if it gets any sort of biological material on it. So if there's dirt or manure or blood, if it got too deep, then I would recommend changing those out.
One of the other things you highlight is just disposal of needles. So as we talk about broken needles and all needles, where do we go with those after we're done with them? Highlight for us just a good method, a good plan for disposal.
So you can use any sort of thick, like think of thick plastic containers. So those coffee cans would be fine. A lot of people will use laundry detergent containers, something with a lid that you can put that in there. Again, thinking thick plastic because we don't want those needles to poke through. They make, biohazard needle disposal containers that you can get at veterinary supply stores. But again, you can use that and that would be great. You can also just use what you have around the house that will prevent that from poking through. I recommend in the article, and I think it's a good idea to have a conversation with your veterinarian as to what they do with their sharps, because there are companies that can pick up biohazard material and sharps, and they can dispose of them for you. Perhaps you would be able to have a relationship with your veterinarian clinic that you could collect your sharps in one of those containers and then drop it off with them, or they'll give you the name of the company that you can take them to. You can also, human clinics are going to have that too. So if you have a relationship with someone in the medical field, find out what they do with theirs and dispose of them properly. The main point of that is that we don't want to be throwing sharps into just everyday garbage. We know that there are zoonotic diseases, so diseases that animals can pass to humans. And we just do not want to introduce a risk of getting poked. In addition to not just diseases, there are some products that are dangerous, especially when we're talking about handling hormone and setting up those estrus synchronization protocols. Those are types of things that we just don't need to expose ourselves or anyone else in the public to. So proper disposal of them, of all sharps, is important, and not just needles. If you're castrating and you have blades, if you break some glass, anything like that, those types of things should all be within a sharps container.
Thinking about animal health and disease transmission, you mentioned the importance if you have or know you have a situation where you've got bloodborne disease in your cattle, the importance of changing needles with every animal. And that, I think, for many of us, we're thinking, that takes a lot of time. Do I really want to do that? But there's some data that would show the value of that in terms of not spreading disease from one animal to another. Just talk through with us the importance of thinking that through and understanding why it's worth doing.
Yeah, so in the article, I listed two bloodborne diseases. One would be bovine leukemia or leukosis virus, BLV, and the other one is anaplasmosis. And we know that we can have vectors, parasite vectors such as flies and ticks that will pass that on. But also, because it is a bloodborne condition, if you are giving an injection of a needle into one animal and then using the same an animal that's infected, excuse me. And then using that same needle and putting it into another animal that may be naive or not infected, you have the potential of transmitting that disease just by your needle and the potential of any blood that would be on those. I did list, there is a research article that I put listed in there where they compared giving a product with a needle or not needle. And the ones that were given a needle on animals that had anaplasmosis had a 60% transmission rate. So again, that's just what we assume, and we already know that it's been proven that you can be inoculating your cattle and without knowing it. Again, I mentioned needles are an inexpensive investment when we're talking about the cost of an animal and long-term health concerns. So I would just really recommend if you have a known problem in your herd that you do what you can for biosecurity, and that would be changing that needle every time. And not just needles. I think I mentioned in the article too that, if you're dehorning, if you're castrating, anything that's going to create some sort of blood or transfer of those bodily fluids that way, even if when you're preg checking or if you're palpating animals, if you possibly get some blood on your sleeve, so rectal sleeves, changing those every time too. Those are the types of things that are important to keep in mind.
Anything else you'd like to highlight on this topic today?
I just want to highlight again, if you want to go to that www.bqa.org, also the articles listed on the beef.unl.edu website, but those are good resources to have. It might even be a good idea just to kind of print off that chart and to have it in your, if you have a calving box supply, or if you have an area where you keep your pharmaceuticals, in your medicine cabinet, just as a good refresher for what you should be grabbing when you need it. And then the other thing I didn't put in the article that I wanted to mention is that needles are color-coded. I don't know if you've noticed that before, but in my mind, I always look at an 18-gauge needle and they're usually green, but not all 18-gauge needles are green. And so it really just depends on the company that makes them. So just again, look on the plastic cover of the needle. It'll tell you what the gauge and the length is, because there's other companies that make pink 18-gauge needles. So make sure you just read it closely so that you're getting the right one.
Thanks for putting this article together. Again, I think very timely and one of those foundational things I think we don't talk about sometimes, but really is important and is important in administering the vaccine or the drug in the right place in the right way and to increase the likelihood we're going to get the effect we're looking for.
Exactly. Thank you.
Well, for more information on the topic we discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find the article at beef.unl.edu. Again, the title of the article, Best Practices for Needle Selection, Use and Care in Cattle Health.